noises. I want you to make a little bit of noises, okay?
I'm not going to sit down here forever.
Hey!
Here he is.
Ethan.
Okay, now do a consonant sound. That's good.
He. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I do for about 6 hours a day.
That sounds delightful.
This is like the worst beginning to a podcast ever.
And now, it's time for the RMNB Podcast.
In 40 minutes, the X-Files theme song is going to go off. Until then, we've got zero agenda, and we definitely didn't go for about 4 minutes of me ranting about Overwatch League before we began that.
I think we're better off, to be honest.
Dear listener, you get to be spared me ranting about esports and Monumental not participating via Team Liquid in the Overwatch League, and me being a big fan of the LA Valiant, especially, and Jen Neal of Puck Daddy being the head of PR for that team, and how RMNB for esports could have been a thing, except I think esports has already blown past the NHL in terms of like coverage, because while the NHL has Steve Dangle on YouTube, there are at least, I'm just going to throw a number out there, 80,000 people doing like really high quality videos and like daily podcasts and like really insightful analysis and coverage of just every angle of Overwatch specifically, which I think is an interesting angle of esports, because since like Counter-Strike Go, which is a lot more bloody and gritty, there hasn't really been a compelling, like what you would call it, like a sport that people watch that is like first person shooter, because it's just too hard to follow. But I think they finally have done it in Overwatch, and it's an interesting time, and I'm weirdly into it. I don't know why.
I love it. I mean, I love hardball. So, I mean,
I can't believe you're still doing that. Like
I'm still watching. It's just this administration.
It's getting worse. I don't know what to tell you, but like whatever happens, it's not going to happen on hardball. I don't know like how to like, and like they keep hiring like who did MSNBC hire? They maybe it was like that, like John Brennan, like the CIA guy. Like these are not the people that, I don't know, man. We don't need to make this a politics thing, but things this stupid don't have non-stupid endings.
By the way, while you're talking about Overwatch, so since I have, you know, Ethan now, I can kind of describe really funny looks. And my look at the screen while you were talking was I was smiling, and you know, I looked like I was smiling, but then my eyes were moving around like I have no idea what he's saying at all right now.
The words and sounds coming out of my mouth are shutting down entire portions of your brain.
Exactly. It's like, what?
Did you see Alexandre Burroughs's repeated knees to the brain?
Oh, that was pretty cool. That was an MMA move. I love it when NHL players go psycho and try to kill people. That really shows the sport in a great way.
He really went like deepest, darkest Kurt Angle needing to go through anger management.
What a pull with Angle. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point.
He got 10 games. Like, if you're like, man, this is unacceptable, it needs to be out of the sport, 10 games doesn't do it. You know what I mean?
No. Well, I mean, the whole thing, I mean, really, I think TJ Oshie, you know, TJ Oshie, I got why they fined him. And again, $5,000 for TJ Oshie is like 35 cents for me. All right. So first of all, I don't feel sorry for him. I'm not, you know, for all the stuff his wife does on Instagram to make extra money that this family somehow needs, you know, I don't feel sorry for him about the fine. And if you cross check someone near the head, I'm totally for that. Yeah. But, you know,
totally for the fine, not for the cross check to the head.
Yeah, just, exactly. Thank
you're
you.
You're going to take out of context. Or...
yeah. But I do think that he made an exceptional point that, you know, he just came back from a concussion. You know, that Thornton play was at least arguably dirty. Like, you know, you want that out of the game.
I'm okay with it.
And then. Yeah, you know, but you know, what's more malicious? And then on top of that, you know, you have Letang. Oh, she's 1 month out of a concussion, and then he keeps punching him in the head, and there's like cheap shots there. I totally get where he was coming from. Yeah. So, but you know, the thing with NHL is like it just doesn't, just like goaltender interference, nothing makes sense with their discipline. You know, yeah. Like if you look at what Burrows did, it's crazy, but you know, is it really worse than certain other things that have happened this year too? I mean, it's hard to really understand what they're trying to accomplish. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it George Parros who's running safety right now? It's an interesting choice, but I don't think you're ever going to get somebody who makes like any kind of like transformative change to the way like the violent stuff in the game happens until you've got an outsider in there. And I get like, there's something that's like, self-selecting about the way former players end up running teams or coaching teams or being skills coaches and or running things like Department of Player Safety. And part of it is, of course, they've got domain knowledge, but they've also got a bias towards not changing things in a drastic way. That's also, you know, like a big problem with the NHLPA is that none of their interests align with those of like the least fortunate players. It's always, you know, those 40 or 50, you know, guys making $10 million plus that they're really looking out for. They've got all this way, and you know, it's hard. It's about entrenched power, I suppose, and like a prejudice towards the orthodoxy. And it's never going to stop. But like, I think the only thing that really stops it is what stops like, you know, George Parros, and which will stop Burrows. You know, Burrows, I didn't think he was going to be in the league after. Did Vancouver buy him out?
I don't even remember. I thought they traded him or something like that. I don't recall.
He's in his mid late 30s. I bet he's like Orpik. He's been around the block for a while and hasn't been good for I'm trying to think of ever. You know, like I'm sure he got high ice time at some point and was fine, but Burrows is a I don't know. It's okay to sleep on Alexandre Burrows as far as I'm concerned. Hey,
but they have, what does 10 games accomplish? It just
it's just a gesture. That's all it is. It's a hollow.
You know, I think the thing is that they have started to wind down fighting. I think keeping the helmets on players during fights is helping. You know, there's been a lot less. It feels like there's been a lot less dirty hits. So I think the NHL is trending in the right way. But I think they have to have much more severe penalties. You know,
was it Cook that took out Savard back in the day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Did Cook even get suspended for that? I don't recall one bit.
I think he did, but I think it was under 10 games. It was not bad. I don't even recall if he got suspended. I don't know.
My position has always been that whatever the suspension should be, they should just put a zero behind it. So, oh, you're suspended for 2 games? Actually, it's 20.
That's actually a good idea.
I like just like if, obviously if the punishment's not working, added order of magnitude to it. That's
you know, and then there's another thing where Philip Forsberg got, you know, suspended 3 games, and you just look at the hit and he's like, that is completely unintentional. You know what I mean? It's just like one of those hits and it had zero maliciousness behind it, and yet he's done 3 games. The guy he hit, I believe, was fine. It's just like, I don't understand, you know, anything. I like when you can't. When you can't put reason and logic behind anything, I think that's when things kind of just need to be relooked at completely.
That's what they're doing with the goaltender interference calls and like really make heads or tails of. That's what's going on with the NFL and what is or is not a catch. Like I watched the Super Bowl and there was that one, I think it was the Eagles touchdown, and everyone was saying, that's not one, he was bobbling it. I was like, he's not bobbling it. He's just
moving, no, he's not. Yeah,
moving the ball from one part of his chest to another part of his chest. Like that's... Anyway, it ended up counting as a touchdown, I believe is what they call that.
You know, Elliot Friedman in one of his latest 31 Thoughts actually had a great idea with how to fix goaltender interference completely, which was to put the responsibility on one person in Toronto in the review room. And when they do that, it's going to be a lot more consistent. I think the problem is now is that when you put goaltender interference into the hands of, you know, like 30 different refs, they're all going to have a different interpretation. So then when teams think one thing is goaltender interference, then it's not to the other guy. And then you get into a situation where Barry Trotz is just challenging to challenge. And it's a good challenge because who knows what goaltender interference is, you know? The one where Grubauer kind of got spun a little bit, you know what? From goaltender interference calls I've seen in the past, I thought that was a dirty play. But then in the spirit of the rule, I think it should have been a good goal. You know what I mean? If the proper goaltender interference is what I believe Gary Bettman said, which is weird to say, wow, Gary totally gets this issue. but Gary was like, you know, if it's not something really offensive that really changes the play, it's a good goal. And I agree with him completely.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I've seen a bunch where they're like I rubbed up against his elbow
3 seconds
before the shot on goal, like, and then like the goalie like giving up on a play is just that's just something that should not happen and it's embarrassing.
That should be a penalty on the goalie. You know that they have easy ways to fix this stuff because they've gotten other rules really well, where you know with diving and stuff like that. Even though I never get the hooking or the tripping and then the diving, you know. Where they call it both times, you know?
I could see it like if you punch me in the face, and then I take like a ketchup packet and explode it, and then someone's like, "Oh my god, Ian just broke Peter's nose!" Like you have legitimately punched me, and I have made it bigger than it was out to be. Did you see the letter? I think it's only a couple hours old. From Glenn, is it Glenn Sather or Sather for the New York Rangers fans?
That was fantastic.
I guess Ted would have done this in 2004 if like
after the season.
Yeah,
I don't think Ted would ever do that in the middle of the season.
No, but like when it was come time for the fire sale, you know, having like some statement like this to say like, all right, guys, I've loaded up the dynamite and I'm about to push this plunger now. And like we are blowing this thing up. I mean, it's a good move.
I took that letter as not a letter to the fans, but a letter to all 30 other teams that, hey, the store is open and we're having a sale.
I've been to a game at MSG since it it renovated. There you go. Like a couple years back, and it's really nice. And they're going to sell that thing out even if the team blows chunks. So it'll be fine. Do you think they'll move Lundqvist? They've got a bunch of stuff to move. McDonough for sure. Nash is really, really expensive. They'd have to hold on to some money if they move Nash, I think, because just no one can afford to bring that on, even prorated. But you don't think they'll move Henrik Lundqvist?
It's an obvious move to make, but I just don't think they'll do it because they're... You know, you need somebody who's a leader, somebody that will sell tickets, somebody that people love. He went on the record the other day about how he was fine with staying with the team through a rebuild. I hate saying this, but like, I do think that branding and things like that are considerations with teams, you know, whereas so far, like someone like Alex Ovechkin, you know, are you really going to trade him? Are you really going to get rid of Braden Holtby? I mean, you wrote today masterfully about how both of the Capitals goaltenders, their value has kind of dropped through the floor a little bit. And, you know, that's a thing. You know, when the Capitals were having a lot of success, it would have made a lot of sense to try and trade Holtby, you know. Paying him $5 million a year, Vezina Trophy guy, you know, he's never going to be higher. And you have a guy, Philip Grubauer, and you have several people in the AHL who look like they could at least be competent backups. You're fine. Trade them. You know,
do you think the goalie market just isn't like, you know, it can go two ways. Like if nothing happens, you can either think, oh, obviously there's no market. No one wanted to buy a goalie. Or you can think, well, the Caps blew it or they thought they had better than what they had. And I don't know which it is, but it does seem like no matter what, those assets are not worth what they were before.
Yeah. I think it's been like this for like 5 to 10 years now where goalies are just so replaceable now that. you know, I think you wrote about it a few years ago with Hunter, and I think you were talking about Michael Neuvirth, how, you know, Neuvirth is a guy that could get them into later rounds potentially, but it really, what matters more is the team, because most goalies are going to give you a pretty normal save percentage. You kind of know what you're going to expect from most guys. As long as you don't have like a bottom tier, you know, goalie, you can probably make some noise.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I think you're right.
Look at Vegas. I mean, they had Subban play just right of the NHL and they still won. I mean, does it really matter?
What a great story that was. And like, it goes to say, like, I think Vegas tells so many different stories about the way assets are valued in the NHL, that there's top end talent that gets paid through the nose because they're amazing. You know, no one plays like your Connor McDavid's and your Sidney Crosby's and your Alex Ovechkin's, and they should make $9, $10, $11, $12 million a year. And then there's players that are the very sort of very bottom of the lineup. And you know, some of those guys aren't drafted. Like, you get guys that weren't evaluated in college or in like major junior, and they end up being Martin St. Louis, or they end up being Vegas's number one goal defenseman, Nate Schmidt. Like, but then you also have like guys that are valued way beyond what they should be. You know, it's not tough to Troy Brouwer, right? Like, Troy Brouwer hasn't earned his paycheck in probably 7 years. And like, Matt Hendricks, I love Matt Hendricks, but Matt Hendricks is not worth the paycheck that he has been getting. But like, Vegas built a team out of what, like the seventh best and eighth best players on 30 different teams. And, I mean, obviously they needed to sort of like, Florida sort of self-immolating. They did with the like, rejection of valuing players like Marchessault,
kind of blew up
in their face, and now they gave, you know, they essentially gifted Vegas their top line, or two thirds of their top line, which is also one of the most fun lines to watch in the entire league right now. But I think it speaks that like, just by looking at the rubric of, oh well, they're an entire team of the seventh and eighth and ninth best players on other teams, doesn't really represent how good that team is, because you could probably make a Stanley Cup team out of that. You don't have your top end talent, but if James Neal is scoring, you're gonna be all right. If Bill Carlson's scoring, you're gonna be all right. And if you can get a 920 save percentage out of Malcolm Subban, like, that's amazing. I don't know how. You have to get lucky, and I don't think that, you know, there's gonna be some kind of like weird sophomore slump with Vegas next year, but they're still a fun as hell team. They've got that winsome attitude. I mean, they've got Nate effing Schmidt on them. That's,
I know.
You can't beat it.
You know, amazing part about them too is that I know that I think it was Braden Holtby who said that they have four second lines, you know?
Oh, that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, and you think about that, and they're just consistent all the way through. They do have some top-end talent that can score big goals with Carlson and Marchessault and James Neal. And, you know, the whole thing with Nate Schmidt is just so utterly frustrating because – you know, it gets tired after a while. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even want to complain about it, but it's just one of those things too, where I think it's not only just a Capitals thing. I think most NHL teams overvalue certain things of certain players. And there are certain things that certain players do that aren't valued correctly yet. And so you look at a guy like, you know, Christian Jews, for instance, like, he's kind of that new age player for defense who's doing really well. I mean, he still has a lot of things, I think, to learn defensively, but he's such a smart player. And, you know, you need productive, smart puck movers like that. And, you know, that's why Nate Schmidt is the number one defenseman on Vegas, on the number one team in the league. I mean, you know, you and Pat have done so much research about how valuable some of these guys are. And I think the best part about your guys' hard work and research is that I'm not surprised when certain things happen, whereas it might surprise some people in the Capitals organization. And you kind of wonder how, you know, like, how is Tom Wilson? I mean, there's no disrespect to Lars Eller or Tom Wilson, but how do you not protect Nate on this team going into this year? How do you not protect Nate over Tom Wilson and Lars Eller? You know, no offense to Lars, because he's an unbelievable player and he's been huge for this team this year. But, you know, keeping a young defenseman who's extremely good and on the rise, it just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't, you know.
So, I have a thought about that. And so, like, I'm trying just to, like, practice, like, empathy with the front office. And
sure.
Here's what I think, right? So Brian McClellan signed the contract to Brooks Orpik, and it was, like, his big gesture, sort of like his entree into, you know, the NHL GM position, is I'm going to get two really big excellent defenseman.
Yeah.
And he got Matt Niskanen, who no one can disagree with, has been just superb for the team. Absolutely. Very quiet, but the most reliable player they've had, without a doubt. And then Brooks Orpik, who has some virtues and had been successful, but definitely is sort of limited in his upside and is looking at the end of his career now. But going into like the end of last season, they knew they were going to lose Carl Alsner because no one could pay what Carl Alsner was going to get, and you wouldn't want to anyway.
Yeah.
And they were going to lose Shattenkirk because that just didn't go great. So they said, okay, we're losing two of our, let's say, seven defensemen at least. And really what was begging to happen is to buy out Brooks Orpik, use that money to lock up Nate Schmidt, and then get a relatively cheap depth defenseman, because then you don't have a proven top four plus one, probably, right? Like, you know, you'd have Dmitry Orlov, Matt Niskanen, Nate Schmidt, John Carlson, and then you can fill in two slots, right? Like, that filling in two bomb slots is easy.
Bowie or Hughes, even Chorney would be okay with me, you know?
Chorney part-time. I don't think that Chorney is playable in the big league, but I also don't think what we've seen out of Brooks Orpik and Madison Bowie is not really scary. What did I do it wrong?
No, you're completely right. I completely agree.
Oh, I'm about the pronunciation.
Oh no. Oh, his name. Yeah.
I don't know. We can't do this every single episode of the podcast, but like they're not, a GM is not going to buy out his own contract. I have been meaning to do some kind of research about this, but it's really hard, and therefore I'm not doing it. When there are buyouts, do those buyouts apply to players that the current GM signed? And you know, it doesn't happen. They're sort of like pot committed, right? Like, all right, we have to hold on to Brooks Orpik, which means we got to pretend like that's our top four, or maybe we'll spread out Brooks Orpik to the third pairing. But you can't say, like, even if Brooks Orpik is playing with Madison Bowie on what is ostensibly the third pairing, his ice time kind of speaks otherwise. You know, like, if you look at what's happening this season on the defenseman, like, he's getting a fair amount of minutes and whatever. I don't know. Up until this season, I feel like the return on Orpik had been way less severe than I was worried about. And so I'm willing to shut up about it up until this point.
I think the other thing too is, you know, Wino reported the other day that the only reason why Nate was made available was because they didn't think he'd be selected. I don't know if saw that.
That's insane to me, though. Everyone knew that he would be selected. Like, the only possible case was if they were going to try and get like a whole bunch of defensemen to build have a whole bunch of like really fungible assets and start dealing, sort of controlling the market and like having a little cartel of goalies. But as soon as they had like Marchessault in line and whoever that Russian guy is, whose name I can't remember now, Shostakovich or whatever, it's not Shostakovich.
Chipyachov.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
As soon as they had those, they're like, oh shoot, they can ice a team. They're not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised. And like, they got Nate Schmidt undrafted out of Minnesota. George McPhee, that was like a feather in his cap. Like, of course they were going to get him. I don't know. It doesn't surprise me. So Brooks Orpik is getting a lot more ice time. Like, the ice time per game, Carlson's in the lead by a good deal. Niskanen and Orlov are exactly the same. Orpik's just under 20 minutes, and then everyone else is just under 15 minutes a game. So, like, there's no way to construe that Juice is playing top 4 minutes or that Bowie is. It's more like Orpik's getting those bottom guys are getting fewer shifts. You know, like the last few years, up and really until like Alsner's injury last year, the defensive pairs have been super static. So it's so easy to do like isolation to figure out how different forwards do with different defense pairings, because they were almost always together. You know, it was always like Niskanen and Orlov, Carlson and Alsner. Was that, or I honestly can't remember anymore, but they're really static and easy to do. Now they're switching up shift by shift, and you're seeing a lot of like Carlson Orpik, which is a strange combo sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I think the thing is with this team is that going into the playoffs, I think we've talked about how weak sometimes their scoring is, but in the end it's how bad the defense has been, which you've obviously written to many times. And I think it's bigger even than you know, Orepic. I think I said this earlier in the year on Twitter, and I still 100% mean it. I don't think Madison Bowie is an NHL defender yet. He's here to stay, but I really think he could, if they threw him down to Hershey for 25, 30 minutes a night, I think that would really behoove him, because now he knows what he needs to work on. I still think defensively he's a little bit of a mess. I think he's going to be taken advantage of in the playoffs. And then on top of that, with Orpik, it's just, ooh. But I also think that, you know, talking to a few people that I really respect, Jews, you know, he's really good and he's really put up good numbers, but I also kind of worry about him in the playoffs too. And I'd much rather see him on a third pairing. So let's say they land someone big at the deadline who can play defense for them in the top four, you know, bumping Jews down to the third pairing. I mean, to be honest, I'd rather see Chorny in there than Orpik. I mean, I don't know what it is about with Orpik, but there are just times when, you know, you look at that Pittsburgh game and, you know, games ramp up in the playoffs where the speed goes to a next level. And I love Orpik because he knows the right ways to play. He's a great guy. You know, he and his wife, you know, made, you know, the Topgolf charity event happen for Make-A-Wish. That is something they did by themselves. And so, you know, he's a great guy, but you also watch these faster games. And, you know, when he can't even make a decision on the 2-on-1 because he's moving so slow, you know, I just really worry that, you know, we've seen it over and over in the playoffs before, is, you know, he'll have good regular seasons with guys he's paired with usually, except for this year. But, you know, in the playoffs, he'll make those big mistakes and it costs him. So I just don't see. I guess, you know, one thing I've struggled about with his team is I just get so tired by the fact that, you know, the obvious answer of what they have to fix, but they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
They need to do something with Orpik. If it's 10 minutes a night, okay, I'm fine with that, but they won't do it. And so you're just like, and then they're benching, you know, why don't we go to the Burakovsky and Verana thing? Is that, you know, Trotz has been sending his messages to the young guys recently. I know Verana got scratched 2 games. I think it was a week ago. And now we have Andrei Burakovsky, who was scratched a couple of games in the beginning of January. Now he's going to be scratched for tonight's game against
Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yes.
I'm not missing a game, am I? It's tomorrow,
yeah, it's
right?
Tomorrow. So,
oh, you're saying it like this is going out tomorrow.
Yeah, this
okay,
is going to go out tomorrow. So, you know, it's frustrating with that whole thing is where I get it. You know, I love that Trotz is willing to send a message, but I feel like his message isn't really received because he only picks on the young guys. So that when bigger guys make mistakes, you don't see, you know, again, I don't want to harp on Orpik, but you don't see an Orpik or a leader that is playing bad. You don't see a Beagle. You don't see other guys get scratched. And I just think that message sending gets kind of falls on deaf ears, and it also hurts younger players because I think sometimes they can take it the wrong way. I think guys like Burakovsky, he just needs to be playing. You know, these guys play all year long, and when they miss 2 months of time, the only thing that will fix them is just playing every night and just drilling it into their head. Don't do that. Don't do that. And getting more opportunities and getting that feel for the game again. So that's one thing that's really frustrating. It tires me out as a Caps fan because it's the same story. I don't know what to write because I feel like I've written it 20 times before.
Yeah. I mean, you just cut a promo there that there's some things I agree with there. I would say almost everything I agree with. I think you're 1,000% right about like your evaluation in Madison Bowie. I'm not seeing NHL level play there. Christian Juice, like I would have zero worry about dropping him into a top four slot and seeing what happens. I'm not worried about the turnovers, which is just something that people pick out about puck carrying defensemen. They said it about Dmitry Orlov, and they don't say it anymore because everyone knows Dmitry Orlov drives play like a crazy person. The Verana and Burakovsky stuff, like there's zero problem at all with giving a player a night off or a night.
Exactly.
Like if they think they're white knuckling it, but it's starting to feel like a crutch a little bit, and that's worrying. And you're like, no one gets better from having a break like that. Like the only time I've seen this move be done against somebody who's not in like a vulnerable playing position, like Vrana or Burakovsky, where they're young and marginal and in the bottom six, is against Jason Shimura. And when that happened a few years ago, it was a gigantic deal. And Shimura was incensed by it. And I don't think he should have been incensed. I think like he deserved a scratch there. But the fact that it was like, how dare Trotz have the temerity to scratch a person who's above the age of 28? Like, and I don't know what's going on inside Trotz's head. I will fully admit that Burakovsky is off this season. And it's not just his numbers as a function of his ice time. It's not just his numbers as a function of how many games he's played. Like, he's not doing what he did last year. Even when he was with, you know, his sweet good boys, Lars Eller and Brett Connolly. Like, and by the way, he should be with them whenever he gets a sweater. But there's something off, and I get that they need to make a change. I just don't see how this decision gets them that.
Yeah, and so you just... I'm with you too. Like, I don't want people to think too that I'm like this morbid defender of Andrei Burakovsky and how he's played this year. I mean, but there's also things that people kind of maybe overlook is that, you know, he has been, his underlying play has been good. And you can tell me if I'm being too general about stuff, but, you know, his shooting percentage is abysmal, you know, so there's kind of two things there that are kind of telling you something as well, is that, you know, is this something where he needs to keep playing and work through, you know, either accuracy or decision making, or is this something, you know, where, you know, he's not a good player anymore, we need to get him off the ice? Because a lot of things that I go through and look through in Natural Stat Trick, it suggests otherwise, is that he's not playing bad necessarily. There's just some things he needs to personally work through to get to that next level, and it's been something he's struggled through throughout his whole career with the shooting percentage, correct?
Yes. I mean, it's always been true that he's had an accuracy problem, and that whatever, I don't know what the word is, prolificity or whatever, like however much he is good at shooting, like he takes a lot of shots on the ice, and that is a big reason why he drives possession. It's off this season, not just on that accuracy front, but like overall volume. And yeah, he's got like the best, like, you know, shot attempt differential numbers on the team, but he was also injured while the team was in its nadir. So like the team was stinking when he was out. And I don't necessarily think the team was stinking when he was out because he was out. Meaning, I think he was just sort of spared from the most bloody part of the season. I don't know. I get like when you do like, I guess you, it depends on who does the numbers, but I think when you do relative shot attempts, it's only in the games that you played and when you're on the bench or not. So like, anyway, like even if you look at like his like overall shot volume, it's off big time from last year and from the last 2 years. And I don't know what to make of it, but I am more pessimistic about him than I'm surprised by how pessimistic about him I am. I'm looking at his relative, Corsi 4. I can't believe I said Corsi 4. I mean, he's still, wow. Yep. 5.66. So the Caps get 5.66 more percent of the total shot attempts when he's on the ice versus when he's on the bench. And that's just in the games he played, and he was, you know, plus 5 last season. Those are all, you know, excellent numbers. So I don't know. I don't know how you solve a problem like that. Honestly, one thing that I've found to be really illuminating is how these players are doing when they are with or not, or when they're with or apart from players that we know are struggling. Like Jay Beagle's having a really rough season, partially because of, and maybe mostly because of his assignments, and Brooks Orpik's having a tough season because of his line mate and his, you know, his whatever, you know, status as a player. You know, he's going through those Matt Cullen years or whatever, although Matt Cullen won an effing Stanley Cup at age 40, whatever he was. So what do I know? Anyway, I guess it's one of those things that's got to come to a head. You know, like, is Barry Trotz going to say, well, first of all, maybe we just need to like shut this down. You cannot trade a player like Jacob Vrana or Andrei Burakovsky at this point in their career because their trade value will never be lower than it is right now.
Exactly. So
that's just a debacle. You don't do that. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a metaphor for it, but everything I can think of, it sounds really gross. So I'm not going to,
you know, I think one thing that could solve Burakovsky is, you know, he talks about passengers, guys who are being passengers. Maybe they should play with Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom. Not only do you have Ovechkin, who is the leader of the team, who is a good leader of the team, and a guy, you know, who, you have two guys there who are driving offense. you know, if a guy's really struggling and you know he's working hard, why don't you bump him up to that first line and try to get him going that way, you know, or give him power play time. I know that seems kind of counterintuitive, but really what you're looking to do is get the guy's confidence going by a goal, a big night, you know. And once you get that going and he feels some confidence, then lower him down and kind of even out the lines. I mean, if I was a coach, that would be something I'd consider, because, you know, I believe this with Andrew Gordon all the times that I've talked to him, is that hockey, you know, hockey and almost anything in life, a big part of it is confidence. And, you know, if you're not feeling confident, and you look at Burakovsky, his shoulders are slumped, that interview he did with Tarek today, I mean, he's just in his own head. And I just can't imagine, you know, if you make a turnover and you start feeling that negative energy of, oh God, am I going to get benched again? I just don't think that that's a positive thing to turn a player around. I really think it's the opposite, is you give someone more opportunities with proven commodities that you know will help deliver, you know? And so that's kind of my thought about it.
I think you're absolutely right about, like, giving him an opportunity and seeing what happens. I think you're 1,000,000% right. But the further you went into that statement, the more you reminded me of Brooks Like's Twitter feed lately.
Oh, and no. So, what did I do?
Here we go. So February 4, Brooks Like says, "It is the most exciting time to be alive. There is an incredible amount of opportunity, creativity, and progress present in the world today. We are so lucky." And then, in reply, Jane says, "It's very easy from a position of great advantage to think that because there's so much available," "It's very easy from a position of a great advantage to think that because there's so much that is available to everyone, that all they need to do is work for it. Sadly, that's not so. A small portion of people benefit from these things. We need to acknowledge that to change it." And then Brooks Like says, quote retweet, not just reply, not just ignore, which is what you do if you got 1,000,000 followers. "Correction. It's very easy from a position of great personal desire to improve oneself and impact the world, which creates earned choices and opportunities. That is what's due of the acknowledgement." Brooks Like has gone off the secret deep end, the, like, power of positive thought, inspirational speaker. I can't wait to see what, I mean, like, I guess I'll never find out, but I want to find out how much money he lost in Bitcoin. Like, I know that dude just sank his escrow money and it's never getting it back.
Why is he so cheesy now?
So here's the deal, Ian. What if he always was cheesy and we just didn't see it because he was wearing our favorite team's uniform? What if we were the ones that were broken and now the illusion is dissolved and we're like, who is this person? He's like not even a fully functional human being. He's like a whole bunch of little goblins that put on a trench and are walking around putting things on Instagram.
What did you say on Twitter the other day that defined his tweets? It was so funny.
I don't remember.
You used a word to define his tweets on your personal, and I just couldn't stop laughing.
I don't remember.
It was a word close to trite.
Oh, hackneyed.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes, dude. Okay, so my boy Brooks is I assume like traveling, and he's in London. All right, let's find this.
No, he went to France. Did he go to France and he got a personal photographer to take pictures of him and Julianne Hough?
Everyone gets a personal photographer when they fly to France, though.
That's really? Is that how it works? I didn't know. I'm sorry.
All right. So, this is in reply to that one. So the one that I sent about the correction, it's very easy from a position of personal desire to improve oneself and impact the world, which creates earned choices and opportunities. That is what's due of the acknowledgement. That has the geotag of the town of Hackney, London. Hackney, and hackney is an adjective which means lacking significance through having been overused, unoriginal, and trite, which is precisely what he's doing when he's quoting that inane effing Oprah book, The Secret. Not that there's anything wrong with Oprah, but, well, there's a couple things wrong with Oprah. Dr. Shit like that.
Oh my God.
Anyway, like, I did not realize that Brooks Orpik is a poison upon the planet, but he's going to be one of these people that's like, he's one of those guys that sincerely thinks that his career in national hockey and his, like, his wealth and his success is a one-to-one ratio with the hard work that he put into it. And
Wait, you're talking about Brooks Like here, not Brooks Orpik.
Did I say Brooks Orpik?
You said Brooks Orpik, and it was a very funny slip of tongue. But continue. Well,
they had the same first name. Anyway, I am not talking about Brooks Orpik, by the way. I think Brooks Orpik's a surprisingly humble person. Yes. His interview on Ellie in the Morning was terrific. Brooks Like believes that it's just like a one-way road from try hard to multimillionaire marrying the dances lady. And that luck is like something that happens to other people who don't have, you know, the power of their convictions. He's probably a serial killer. He's the hockey player that's most likely. He's got bodies. He's got bodies. We should invite him on the podcast.
We should. That would be amazing.
So like, hey, hit him up on Twitter and we'll be like, hey, Brooks Like, man, we really shouldn't see what you're up to these days. Will you join us on the podcast? There is like a 0.45% that he will check out past episodes. The only thing that would happen is if one of our troll ass Twitter followers blows up our spot and says, "Don't do it, Brooks."
Which you know they would.
Don't do it, Brooks. Peter and Ian are just dunking on you nonstop.
You know, I've tweeted to him like a bunch of times that I know he's seen it, and I, you know, it's just really funny because you know which athletes hate you, and you can definitely tell. That he hates. I mean, you know what? The really funny thing.
Not true though. Hate is an emotion that fully functional human beings. Like emotionally,
that's a great point.
And he is just a bunch of cardboard shavings wrapped up into a vinyl suit that has Brooks Like's face on it.
Wow.
He's not.
Wow.
Look into those eyes. Is there a? Okay, whatever. We wanted him to be the captain, Ian. We have been wrong about things.
Oh my gosh!
What were you saying there?
I had a point and then I forgot it. But I don't know with Like. Oh no! What is that noise?
Oh, that's the X-Files theme telling us that we've consumed our time. Closing thoughts about Brooks Like or whatever.
Closing thoughts. I'm gonna totally get away from Brooks Like. I'm gonna be rooting for Garrett Rowe in the Olympics. He's from. I want to say he's from Vienna, Virginia. And I've heard a lot of things about him because he's BFFs with Andrew Gordon, who I talk to all the time. And so I'm really rooting for him. And I'm going to try and annoy him and give us stuff to post during the Olympics. And I hope the Capitals change some things up because they're not as good as they think they are.
I bet they know. I bet they know deep down. I don't think I'll watch any of the Olympics. I'm just going to watch more Overwatch League. I just want to see, you know, my team, the LA Valiant, really just slay it in the second stage. I'm really interested to see what happens to the meta once the Mercy nerf comes into play. Are they going to rely on Moira more? Are we going to see more of the quad tank slambulance team comp? You know, like what's going to happen? Are they going to play on Blizzard World? Like, are the new maps going to be in there? Like, when does Flower join the team? These are all big questions to me. And you guys can all just check it out on my Overwatch esports blog that I'll start when I have.
And I just figured out that there's going to be no more Hardball because NBC is going to put Olympics on all of their channels. So I don't know how I'm going to live for 2 hours.
I get like why Hardball?
I don't know.
At least
wait. Can I tell you how I first got into it? Because. Okay, it's two things. One is that they used to make fun of him on Saturday Night Live all the time. And I thought the character was just so funny that I was like, this guy, I just love this guy. Because, you know, I was just like, you know. So the other thing was is that my mom hated him. And my mom is very aggressively Republican. And so especially now, you know. So a lot of times when my mom feels one way about someone, I immediately think, oh, they're good. So my mom really hated Chris Matthews. So I was like, oh, yeah, okay. But he kind of just is like yelling and is really ramped up and talks so much that he doesn't let other people talk. And I don't know, there's some kind of idiotic charm to him that I really like. And I also think he has really good gas. I mean, honestly, I think that's honestly the best part is that once he's done talking, he has really good guests, and they're actually I learn a lot from them. And I've been reading a lot more politics lately just because I feel like I have to, you know, so it's nice.
Let me just in my closing minutes, I'll say that I can no longer participate in like the political, I don't know what to call it, the trough,
the discourse, the discourse.
No, it's not even that. Like I a pox on both houses right now. Like, I don't know. I feel like anything I say will maybe be insufficiently articulate to what I would want to say, but like, I feel like we it's really tempting to believe the thing that's most convenient for us to believe about both parties. And I don't mean to say that both parties are bad. Although I would say actually both parties are bad.
Yeah.
But one party is bad to a degree that the other party is not. And we should be very careful about how the antagonism of the moment realigns us in scary ways. Like there's no progress made. Okay, how about this? The president is not the disease. The president is the symptom of the disease. And even if you scrape that black hat off, there's something deeper down in there now that we kind of have to reckon with. And no one sincerely likes the president. Even the ones that do, he's just a totem. He's just a conduit on the way for the in-group to reach their specific resource-based goals. And the out-group would really like there to be this sort of like convenient but also elevated solution to the problem via like the former FBI director's investigation into him. And like that something on the order of collusion with Russia would be the out. And it's not. This is a political reality, and it's not, there's not going to be something this stupid doesn't end smart. Like I
know what you're saying. And
anyway, I can't deal with the churn anymore. Like I turn off like the political podcasts, and I don't listen. I don't watch like the news anymore. And there's this like scary realignment happening that bugs the hell out of me on the left that I find really, really worrying. Like this sort of, like what progress is gained if the president, like maybe like the way this happens is that like the midterms happen and both houses of Congress are turned over to the other party, and then there's investigations and maybe the president resigns or maybe the president's impeached. Nothing happens before the midterms. Even if there's an indictment that comes through, nothing happens. But then once that happens, you really do have to reconcile the fact that there's this political moment, and you can either do something with it that's meaningful, or you can use it to be antagonistic to this wretched, disgusting person who is blatantly corrupt and hollow politically. He's only useful as a focusing point for blatant corruption. And I don't know. I obviously I haven't been drilling on this particular rant, but if you believe in the opposite of what Donald Trump is doing, then you should advocate primarily that which you believe instead, and not just things that like the trivia of the Russia investigation will ultimately be trivia, because nothing can happen without political action. And political action requires advocacy of political goals. So start with that. Build a coalition and do that based on things you want to see happen rather than people you want to see gone. That's what I wanted to say.
You know what? That's extraordinarily well put. And I completely agree with you too. And I guess I think one of the symptoms that I struggle with and why I'm so in tune with everything is that it doesn't seem like there's an agreed set upon facts anymore. You know what I mean? Like even facts have been politicized and like beyond the point where both sides could agree. And I agree with you that, you know, whatever happens in the next year, that same problem is still going to be there. And how do you rectify it? You know? And I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's sad and that's depressing. But that's why I've been spending a lot more of my time watching and reading about politics. And you know, before I wasn't, you know, something that I passively paid attention to when I was interested in, but, you know, because my dad, you know, was in the government his entire career, so I heard about a bunch of stuff. But, you know, it's just something where I'm really worried about the disinformation, and that, if anything, I've really seen how Russia works now, in a sense that how does Putin stay in power? It's this constant lying, this plausible deniability about stuff, which is kind of what our country is kind of starting to trade into, which is really worrying. So, yeah, so it's a horrible thing to end on, but I think that that was extraordinarily well put. And I think anyone who, you know, feels whichever way, I think we all can agree that we don't really have conversations anymore that are coherent and kind, and we like each other. You know, I remember, you know, one thing to kind of leave off on is that I watched a show that Sarah Silverman did. I think it was just on, you know, Facebook or something, where she was going and having conversations with other people who felt completely different than her and her political beliefs. But it was fun. It was nice. And I think both sides learned something. And I think, you know, even when I talk to my mother, you know, whom I deeply love and who is the reason why I work so hard, is I try to make her proud every day, is that, you know, I whenever people don't agree, you have to be able to have a conversation. And even though you may not agree, you should never be to the point where you're so entrenched on what you believe that you can't at least show empathy and understanding to the other side, you know? So I don't know. The thing that I like about our community is that I believe that, you know, what we've built here is a safe space where everyone can kind of speak, other than the Facebook comments, where people can speak and really kind of have a collaborative discussion where me, you, Pat, anyone else on the site is no bigger than the person who's commenting. And so, you know, I wish we had that in our country as a whole.
Well put. Thank you, Ian. And thank you, listeners, for doing the Russian RMEB plaid-plast. Go on to the tunes of the eye and then give us the subscribe reviews rates. Thank you for listening.
Love you guys. Sorry, we were so heavy. We didn't mean to do that.
It ended weird. I don't know. That happens sometimes.
All right, bye.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.